Sounds like Starfleet.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit more strict than Starfleet.
I'll bet. Welcome, Warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your hosts, Jorn Sutai Vampir and Jajim Vestai Jajim, will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Welcome, warriors, to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. But we've run out of Klingon books, so we're going to have to move on to something new. So,
and we're going to make you pay for it!
And so, today, we are going to be looking at a book called Legends of the Ferengi by Ira Stephen Bear. And then we're going to be looking at two novellas from a series of books called The Worlds of Deep Space Nine. And the two books we're looking at for that is Satisfaction Not Guaranteed. That is a Ferengi story by Keith R.A. DeCandido. And we're going to be looking at Olympus Descending, which is a story about the founders by David R. George III. There's a lot of stuff going on there.
This particular series is broken into three volumes. This is actually volume three of the three, each containing two stories. Each of the stories is based on a different segment of the population. In this particular book, we're looking at the Ferengi and the Dominion.
Right. The founders, and yes. So, going to be an interesting conversation. So, would you like to take us through a brief summary of the plot for Legends of the Ferengi?
Well, you know, the Legends of the Ferengi are going to have to start out with money.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to all be about money and how they get money. So the summary from the back of the book literally is, once you have their money, never give it back. Number one, anything worth doing is worth doing for money. Rule number 13, for centuries, these and other famous Ferengi rules of acquisitions have been the guiding principles of the galaxy's most successful entrepreneurs. But the wisdom behind them was not won without a high cost in lives and money. I mean, Latinum. Now, at last, these inspiring tales of avarice, Ferengi, wrestling, monetary gains from the jaws of poverty are available to the profit-hungry across the galaxy.
There you go. All right. In the second book we're looking at, and this is called Ferenginar, Satisfaction Not Guaranteed, Quark's profit-driven homeworld is rocked with scandal as shocking allegations his brother's first wife, the mother of Nog, threaten to overthrow Rom as Negus of the Ferengi Alliance. Making matters worse, Quark has been recruited by Rom's political adversaries to join their coup d'etat with guarantees of all Quark ever dreamed if they succeed in taking his brother down. While Ferenginar's future teeters on the edge, the pregnancy of Rom's current wife, Leda, takes a difficult turn for both mother and child.
And just listening to you read that description, I'm going, Keith did not write that description of his work.
Yeah, probably.
That had
not.
To be written by an editor. You were stumbling way too much.
Yeah.
In that puppy.
Yeah.
The second story, novella, in the book, second book we're looking at, is The Dominion. Olympus Descending. Since its defeat in the war for the Alpha Quadrant, the Great Link, the living totality of the shape-shifting founders, has struggled with questions. At its moment of greatest doubt, its fate and that of the Dominion itself is tied to Odo's investigation of his kind's true motives for sending 100 infant changelings out into the galaxy. As Odo searches for answers and takes a hard look at his past choices, Tar and Atar, it's a Jem'Hadar name, forgive me, that person, reaches a turning point in his own quest for clarity, and one from which there may be no going back.
Yep. And again, here we have a description that is a little dubious.
As to what's in the story, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that our authors didn't write these. All right. So
it would be hopeful that the editor had read the books before they wrote them too, yeah, but you never know.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. All right. So why don't you open up with your overall impressions, John?
Okay. We're looking at three separate books here. All right. Two of the books, since they're novellas, are printed in one volume, but basically three different books. Legends is a collection of the rules of acquisition, with stories for each of the rules, mostly written for comical intent. Now, I should point out that the particular author of this work had previously published the complete rules of acquisition, but in that book, he just stated each rule in the Ferengi rules of acquisition on a separate page. You turn the page, you read another rule.
Mm-hmm.
To get through all of them. This time he added a little content to each one. The Ferenginar book is a complete short story about an incident in Ferengi history. Now, they're talking about it being a short story. Actually, it is the size of a novella. It's a good 160 pages of story. It's an incident in Ferengi history after the events of DS9. When I was reading this story, I couldn't help getting the feeling that I had read or watched this story before, but I don't know where. It was deja vu. I don't remember reading this book before, but boom, there it was. The Dominion was a bit tougher. There was less dialogue, more introspection. Whether it was Odo having introspection as he's watching the Great Link, Odo having introspection from his past lives, or Odo having introspection of, why did we send all these infants out in the first place? Like I said, there's very little dialogue, a lot of internal thoughts, sometimes going over his reasonings a couple of times. So you're backtracking on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We really need more about this progenitor, which is developed in this book, and his backstory. He's supposed to be the god of the changelings. Who is he? How is he a god? And also, it's stated that the founders can't reproduce. So they're supposed to die off when they all die. But that begs the question, where did they get 100 infant changelings to send out into the galaxy?
Yep.
Take it away, Jim.
All right. So anyway, Legends of the Ferengi. I enjoyed Quark's commentary on the rules of acquisition. Obviously, the author had fun writing this book. And it was an enjoyable read. I did laugh a lot through this.
They're very short. They're easy to get through.
Oh yeah, you could read it in a day, in an afternoon. All right, so Ferenginar, it was a fun novella. It took us inside how things are done on Ferenginar. Rom has thrown the prophet-driven society into a tailspin with his new reforms, and not to mention being married to Leta, which drives everybody about crazy. The planet itself winds up being divided into two factions, pro-Rom and anti-Rom. Quark understands the problem, but his loyalties are divided between Rom and the traditional people who want to get back to the traditional Ferengi values. And, of course, the women, who are now allowed to wear clothing and earn profit, they are pro-Rom, and the others are anti-Rom, and Brunt is pushing really hard the Grand Negus. So that'll be an interesting thing.
And I know this book was written in 2005,
mm-hmm.
or actually written before that, but my God, doesn't it remind you of Make Ferenginar Great Again?
Yeah, there you go. All right. Now, the Dominion story. I was a bit confused about this story. I had a tough time figuring out... I had a tough time figuring out where we were a lot of the time, and because there were a lot of shifts going on, and they were not... I didn't think they were announced. It was almost like reading a Faulkner book. William Faulkner was famous for his disregard for time. Now, I'm not putting down the author. George,
well, it's a good thing I never read any Faulkner.
Yeah. George is a fine writer, but I was a little confused where this was going, to be honest. Mostly what I got out of it in the end is the Dominion is no longer a cohesive organization. Mostly this story seemed to deal with beliefs and questioning beliefs. Yeah.
It's kind of like a Bajoran book almost. You're seeing the founders trying to get religion.
Apparently, and according to this book, they already have it. So I don't know. There just seemed to be a lot of time shifting and a lot of back and forth.
You mean you couldn't tell when Odo was talking to the Great Link on his little island, and then in the next sentence he was in the closet talking with Kira?
Right, yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe if I slowed down and read it again, I'd get more out of it. But to answer your points, I would say, yeah, the progenitor was just kind of there and then wasn't there, which caused the Great Link to fragment. Now, the founders couldn't reproduce, first of all.
Or so they say.
Right. Well, we've been led to believe in Deep Space Nine that the founders are immortal, unless they're killed by something. They are immortal. We find out in this book they are not immortal, okay? And then your question, so where did the 100 infant changelings come from? They don't reproduce. So...
yeah.
I don't recall an answer to that, other than I seem to remember that somewhere in the book it was mentioned the infant changelings were not really infants. They had to call them something, so that's what they called them.
But if you remember from DS9, Odo started out as a goo.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. So, well...
I don't know that they've decided what they want to do with the changelings, and I don't know if they're going to go any further forward with it.
I doubt it, because unless someone else picks up the story thread, the founders are scattered. They have all of them gone their separate ways, and so they aren't an organized group anymore. I wonder what's going to happen with the Vorta and the Jem'Hadar.
Which would be an interesting question, because without their gods, if they suddenly decide that their gods are gone, a.k.a. they weren't really gods to begin with, are we looking at SGDS9?
Yeah.
a.k.a. Stargate DS9?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's definitely the way this book was. It was interesting, but it was really difficult to read. So, all right, so we have characters in here. We've got Quark, Nog, Rolaren, Rom, Leeta, Brunt, and several other members of Ferengi industry, and that would be in the Ferengi story, and also Pinadora and her father.
Who is Rom's first wife.
Right. And she doesn't hate Leeta or anything. All right, and then in the
She comes across as a traditional airhead in the book.
Yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, doesn't she seem like she's more like insane? Just not her faculties aren't working?
You know, the problem is we've only seen really three Ferengi women in all of DS9. And two of them, Rom's mother and... the other Ferengi female, who was profit-driven, are definitely a cut above what you would think women would have put up with.
Ah.
I mean, what allows a woman in Ferengi society to go around naked all the time.
Yeah, well, it's not something that was allowed. It was that was the law.
Right.
So.
But what half of society would put up with that?
Exactly. But the Ferengi, when they were introduced in Deep Space Nine, they were made to appear evil. All right. If you remember that first time they showed up before Riker grew his beard, whatever episode that was.
The Outpost, I think it was.
Last Outpost or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. They.
Which actually had the guy that played Quark as playing one of the Ferengi.
Yes. Yes. Armin Shimmerman did appear in there. So anyway, they were made to look like they were evil. They were made to look like they were strange and really weird the way they moved. And they had those whips and everything.
Ah, but those whips are from 1960s science fiction. Neutronic whips had been a tradition in 60s science fiction, particularly Asimov.
Yeah. And then, we see other Ferengi later on, and they're not as, they don't act as weird as they do before. And then when we get to Deep Space Nine, we got Quark, who is just kind of a normal person, kind of person who just likes to make lots of money. And he doesn't.
And just that'd be a little bit alien.
Yeah. And he doesn't act weird. All right. And he doesn't have the whip, although he does refer to it when he talks about his Marauder Moe action figures. So I don't know. Any other characters you want to discuss from
her
that?
Her father is actually, the way he was described in his actions in that particular story are what led me to the let's make Ferengi great again.
Thing. Yes.
Because he's the diehard on that score.
Yeah. So, yep. And in the second story, the Dominion story, we have Odo, Kira, Tyranitar, and Tyranitar is the foundling or the changeling baby.
No.
Huh?
No. He's the Jem'Hadar.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Maz is the changeling.
Right. All right. Tyranitar is the Jem'Hadar baby that they took aboard Deep Space Nine, and they had to let him go because he was too wild. So, but he's grown up, but he's still fully Jem'Hadar.
Not fully. He's not addicted to the white.
And that's the only exception. But he does cause a little bit of trouble. He is living on Deep Space Nine. He has his own quarters, but he gets into some trouble. Odo kind of helps to keep him under control through Kira, because Odo told Tyranitar anything Kira tells him, it's like it was coming from Odo. Okay, we have Laz, who was on Deep Space Nine, and he was portrayed by J.G. Hertzler, and he was the founder that got upset with Odo because Odo was not being a normal changeling.
In this particular book, he's constantly questioning the rationale for sending out the 100.
Right. Okay.
He is a member of the 100. He's just constantly questioning, why did they do this to us?
Yeah. And we have Weyoun, number 7, 8, 9, whichever one it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the later Weyouns, and another person called Vanis, another Vorta called Vanis, and then who was Indurain? I can't remember.
I forgot already. Must have been highly, highly important.
Yeah, I guess not. This takes place all over. Yeah, these two stories.
He must be the old guy.
Oh, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
There's one changeling who is older than anybody else Odo has met. Which, of course, now begs the question again, if they're not making new ones, how have they got old ones?
Who knows?
Because old should be a relative term compared to others, and if others aren't of the same age, I don't know what's going on!
So in other words, we found us a plot hole.
Oh, God.
All right. Anyway, these stories take place all over. We have Deep Space Nine and Ferenginar for the Ferengi story. And then for the Dominion story, we have Deep Space Nine, the Founder's Room, Jem'Hadar attack vessel number 971. I'm not exactly sure why that is significant, 971, because it seemed to be as many times as it got mentioned. And Anan K Alpha, and that was an interesting part of the story. Anan K Alpha is a Federation prison camp that had a number of prisoners in it until the founders, the female shapeshifter from Deep Space Nine, after she signed the instrument of surrender, she was sent to that prison, which was altered to hold no one but her. In other words, she was the only prisoner in the entire place. It had been remodeled, and getting in and out of that place is quite the adventure.
Or is it? We can't really tell, because did Tyranitar actually go in and come out, or was that just a dream?
Let's save that for a little bit.
Okay.
Because I was thinking some of the same question. You didn't list anything for discussion points. I have a couple. Brunt as Grand Nagus.
Yeah, but this ain't the first time that concept was proposed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple times in the series where he's trying to take up the staff.
Right. But let's say he were successful in this story, which he wasn't. Rom retains his position. But let's say Brunt was successful in his bid to become Grand Nagus, overthrow Rom, become Grand Nagus, and the first thing he is going to do is tell the women to take their clothes off and give their profit back. How far do you think he
would... Are you sure?
Oh, well, yeah, that's Brunt.
No. I think the first thing he would do is strip Quark of everything Quark owns.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I'd go along with that.
You know, here's another question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you kind of alluded to it here in your notes, because you didn't type Grand Nagus. You have Brunt as Nagus.
Right.
But not Grand Nagus.
Ah.
You got a Grand Nagus.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any, in this society, on Ferenginar, are there any just Naguses?
Naguses. Well.
You know, what is a Nagus?
Well, I don't speak Ferengi, so I don't know. But, I mean, sure, you know, I suppose you could think of the leaders, like, I'm trying to think of his name, the guy that makes Sluggo Cola and, you know, all the big company people.
Sluggo.
No, he's not Sluggo.
He's Sluggo. Yeah, he was.
No, he had a different name. I could look. I'm not.
And the other cola drink was named for the other guy who made that cola.
Ah.
So, yeah.
But at any rate, when they would get together with the Nagus, the Grand Nagus, I suppose they would be considered lesser Naguses.
Or would they? I don't know. It's never said.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on with that.
No, we don't get a real clear...
I mean, Nagus could be a title that you give to somebody who's an industry leader but hasn't made it financially.
Hmm, could be. I don't know. We didn't get a great deal of...
clarity on that question.
Yeah, clarity, and we didn't get a great picture of how things are run, because Nog was upset. Or not Nog, but Rom was very upset. You know, Leda was having some difficulties with the pregnancy, and that's all he cared about, which is not unusual for Rom.
We don't want to start saying Leda X either.
No.
You know, okay. Or excuse me, Leda X, you know.
Yeah. All right, now here's something that blew me away. The couple, Ro Laren and Quark.
Hey, step back for a second. When we left Ro Laren, she was a Marquis. Marquis. Yeah.
Yes.
She was somebody who was an enemy of the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's back in a security position?
Yeah, she's security chief on Deep Space Nine.
How did that happen?
I don't remember all the details, but it happened in some of the other books.
Oh, okay.
Deep Space Nine, at some point, the station, the Cardassian station, gets destroyed. And the Federation builds an entire new, bigger, and much improved Deep Space Nine, and then turns it over to, I believe, Kira, if I'm not mistaken, and Ro is there on there.
Well, Kira was in charge of DS9 at the end of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in charge of DS9 now.
Right.
So.
And she is is actually a Federation officer.
Unless for some reason, Kira got promoted and one of her friends died, she had to steal a starship, go back to a planet, retrieve the body so that the Katra could be reinstalled in that body.
No.
Was demoted back to captain again.
You've went far afield here. You're starting to cross streams. Let's.
I thought we said crossing the streams is a good thing.
Well, not
it took
in...
down the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
So, anyway, the president of the Federation, as a matter of fact, gets assassinated on Deep Space Nine, and that isn't a book by David Mack. I know that. She is a Nan Bacco, and she is killed on Deep Space Nine. And then later on, I read another book more recently where Kira actually becomes a Vedic.
Well, that would eliminate her from being captain of DS9.
Yeah. So this is just a snapshot in a much, much larger story. So the answers are out there. They're in the books.
And those are more interesting questions than Ro Laren and Quark hooking up, because if you look at Ro Laren's character, yeah, her character is of that type that she would hook up with somebody who is as nonconformist as Quark.
Okay. All right, you have a number of adventures to discuss here. You want to take us through that?
Okay, what do we got here? Quark convinces his girlfriend, Ro Laren, to come to Ferenginar with him, and Nog tags along. Well, he definitely wants Ro along with him and didn't want Nog along with him.
Right. And Ro
couldn't say no to Nog because Nog is the son of Rom.
Mm-hmm. And Ro does not like Ferenginar.
If you're not from Ferenginar, how do you like Ferenginar? If you're not into dancing in the rain, why the hell would you like that planet?
Precisely. And that's why she didn't like it. It was just damp. So
you almost got to wonder, how does anything grow on Ferenginar?
I suppose there'd be...
If the clouds are going to block all the sun.
Yeah, I suppose you could have lots of ferns. I don't know.
Well, and basically, what do they eat? They eat stuff out of the soil anyway, so...
Right.
I don't know. And, okay, Leela is having trouble giving birth to a Ferenginar baby. Well, you know, I have to wonder about that because the head's shaped so weirdly. It's almost like a human trying to give birth to a Klingon baby. And I got to wonder how that's done.
Yeah.
But be that as it may.
To be honest, John, I don't want to know.
Rom goes out and finds the most expensive doctor on the planet. That doesn't necessarily mean he's the best. But
right.
What do I know? At least until the plot ousts him, the plot to oust him is revealed, and the doctor withdraws his services because now Rom can't afford him. We need to take a look at the Ferengi medical ethics here, because I'm pretty sure in human culture, if a doctor takes on a patient and the patient suddenly goes from uber rich to uber poor, the doctor is not going to throw the patient out.
No.
But what do I know? Brunt organizes a plot to disgrace Rom, but Brunt does that in every episode of DS9.
That he appears in.
He appears in. and take the title of Negus away from him. Same thing.
Right. Now he, well.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Brunt is, I am sure, Brunt would be brutal. I do not think that, you know, the way I see this is once you've made a turn, it's awful hard to go back. I think Brunt would run into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, unless he was put in a position where he can't, but yeah. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Odo, oops. That's why there's a big gap there. We're switching books here.
Yep.
Switching stories. Odo goes back and forth between DS9 and the Great Link, remembering events from his past and trying to address questions posed by Laz about sending forth the 100. And we, as we talked about earlier, we don't know for sure when we're making the transition between DS9 and the Great Link.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And there's one other place that we didn't talk about in places either.
Oh?
And that's the Nova, when they go out to the Nova.
No, which is supposedly where the progenitor lived.
Actually, it is where the progenitor is. I changed the word lives to is on purpose.
Yeah.
Kira takes Tarrant atop the Jem'Hadar to see the female founder in the Federation prison on Ankia Alpha, maybe.
Yeah.
That was not clear. I mean, if he had gone through the steps that he did to break her out of that prison for real, and the consequences really happened, that could have been an interesting story. But we're not even sure if he imagined it. We're not even sure if he imagined the trip. We don't know what's going on.
I'm with you. I am so with you on this. I mention it again later on in my notes. But it was the best scene in the entire story.
And it was all a dream.
I know. You're reading along, you read this thing, and it's like, oh, wow, this daring escape. And then you have, you switch the scene, and it's like, wait a minute, what happened here?
I was expecting there to be a saint from elsewhere there somewhere.
Yeah, well, I don't.
For those who aren't paying attention to the conversation, Saint Elsewhere is the TV series where they pull that in the last episode.
Yeah, where it was all this guy's
imagination. The whole series was a...
Yep.
The whole series was a dream.
Yeah, I remember that. All right, going on.
A supernova appears. It draws Odo and five other changelings out to see if somehow it's linked to the progenitor. And they find the progenitor has been killed?
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder, okay, in the founders, in the changelings, is there a bunch of Klingon? You know, the Klingons found their gods to be two, and they killed them?
Yeah. I don't know.
Something killed the progenitor.
Yeah. And I am...
What's this with killing gods?
Right. We'll see.
How do you do that?
We'll see. That's the whole thing. I mentioned it in concepts. The progenitor was no longer needed and just said, okay, I'm going away, and went away. And then the founders scattered. I don't know. It's part of the confusion of everything in there for me.
Yeah.
So
you need a founder's cleric to go in and make sense of this religion that they're
espousing? All the questions that came up were surrounding beliefs, belief systems that were not holding up.
Yeah.
So the belief systems weren't holding up, so they just fell apart. There was no more faith, and so it just kind of went poof.
Well, since Trek is definitely a commentary on American culture, American society, is the authors, the editors trying to say that's what's happening to American religion?
I don't know if I would want to try to second guess them. So.
Okay.
Anyway. All right. So what about concepts?
Okay. How far will the scheming go on Ferenginar?
As far as it has to.
Well, okay, that's an interesting question. Because isn't what Rom's doing trying to take away the scheming?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, he's he doesn't have that power to make that stick. I don't think he ever would. I mean, what's going to go on in the back alleys and the smoke-filled rooms and all that stuff is going to go on anyway. And if you want to know the honest-to-goodness truth, I think Rom's rule will fall.
Yeah, well, who knows? Yeah. It's
if I were asked...
You'd like to think that it wouldn't, but it may be just a matter of some small changes get incorporated, and that could make the difference, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, you know, he thing of it is he is trying to go too fast with the changes, and nobody's accepting them, except for the people who are benefiting from them.
Okay. So you're, again, this is written in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of equating Rom's changes to the Green New Deal by AEO. There's a lot of similarity in American politics in this book.
Well, yeah, there are.
Isn't that Trek?
Yeah.
I mean, you got people going now, when did Trek get so woke? And the answer to that question is 1966.
Yes. Okay. And your next point?
Where do the Founders come from? All right, we've got the Progenitor. The Progenitor is obviously mortal. Was the Founders a project of his?
Mm.
Are there progenitors, plural, where he came from? There's a lot of backstory that can go on there. And then, like you talked about earlier, how strong are the bonds with the Jem'Hadar?
Mm-hmm.
If the Founders break up, what happens to the Jem'Hadar and the Vorta?
Right.
Well, we know what's going to happen with the Vorta. The Vorta are going to stick with the Jem'Hadar because that's their meal ticket.
Right.
But the Jem'Hadar can just become the marauders from the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. Or you can withhold their Ketracel White and they'll all die, except for a few.
Well, who's gonna make the Ketracel?
Vorta.
If the Founders break up.
The Vorta.
Do the Vorta know how to do it?
Oh, I'm sure they do.
You sure?
Oh, yeah.
That may have been a way of the Founders controlling the Vorta.
The Founders didn't do anything but lay around in a puddle.
Well, like yeast, they may shit Ketracel White.
Okay, that may be.
You know, that's where alcohol comes from.
Yeah. All right, now we're gonna move on. I'm wondering if this isn't more of a philosophical commentary to make the reader think. If that's not what George's intention was in writing this, is to make you think, make you question your beliefs, and so forth. I don't know.
Yeah, it would have been much more intense if somehow he could have dropped the questions into the writing for you to think about, rather than having you have to discuss the novel with somebody else to actually come up with the questions that he wants you to ask.
Yeah. Well, he's not going to do all our heavy lifting. We have to do some of our own.
Why not? What do we pay him for? And let's face it, this is all about money, isn't it?
Hmm.
We want the Latinum.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just something for, it's a thought exercise. I don't know. So, the Ferengi concepts. The Ferengi are an untrustworthy, dishonorable bunch and will do almost anything to ensure they make profit. And we see that here in the Ferengi story.
But I want to throw this one out at you. Are the Ferengi untrustworthy?
Of course.
If you take a Ferengi, as someone who's profit-driven and will be going for that profit, does that not make them trustworthy and that you can trust that they will go for the profit?
It does. But to what lengths are they willing to go? I mean, Odo kept Quark under constant surveillance.
Yeah. because Odo was not a Ferengi. And Brunt kept Odo under constant surveillance
for the opposite reason. You mean Korra?
Because he wasn't being Ferengi enough.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, yeah, they're honorable in their own ethics system.
Yeah.
I think that's the point we need to look at here. Aliens are aliens, and therefore they're going to have different ethics than the Federation. The Federation constantly run into problems with alien races because they expect the alien races to have the same ethics that the Federation has.
That's a good point. It's a very good point. And, you know, I've actually thought about in the past, why do we get upset with a group of people on Star Trek when they don't act like we think they should? Because they've been doing things their way. We do our own thing. But we've got still have to go in and change it.
Yeah.
That was original.
Because that's what the audience expects.
That was original series philosophy. I remember reading a long time ago, I can't remember where it was. It might have even been one of David Gerald's commentaries on Kirk going down to the planet with women with brass bras and the women are in charge. And then Kirk comes along and gets them to change everything. And that was one example of plot. Okay, returning back again to the belief idea. Beliefs are fragile, okay? The Vorta and Jem'Hadar believed the Founders were their gods, but even the Founders believed in a god. And when that went away, there was no longer anything to believe in. There was nothing to bind them together.
I almost have to disagree with that, because if you look at the history of religion on Earth, every time, say, the Catholic Church runs into a new concept that kind of would destroy the belief system that they've used for these last several centuries, they rationalize a reason to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So would the Vorta and the Jem'Hadar, well, the Vorta would have to do it. The Jem'Hadar are just going to follow. Would the Vorta find a reason to rationalize the new behavior of the Founders?
Mm-hmm.
And would the Founders try and rationalize a new ethos for the progenitor and where he came from and what he did and how he was?
He or she or it.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
It's we have done that for centuries. We look at something, this god must have done this to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
But then we find that something else actually made it happen. And we go, this god started this process over here that made it happen.
Yeah.
And we just keep doing that.
Yep. Yeah.
So they may find ways around it. I mean, look at the Bajorans and their faith in the prophets.
Oh, the Bajorans, yeah.
Bajorans, yeah. And their faith in the prophets, okay? They didn't know who they were. Then they found out that they were wormhole aliens.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't make them not gods.
Yeah, it didn't faze them a bit.
They just changed the rationale a little bit to make it still work.
You know what I think? And maybe to close this argument out, and I mean argument as in discourse, we're not arguing with each other, but
and I don't think you can close it out, because they're going to keep it going anyway eventually.
Well,
you listeners can keep it going too. I mean,
yeah,
post something on Facebook or in the comments or somewhere. Mm-hmm. And let us know what you think.
Well, and
the Vorta come up with a new system?
Oh, you know they will. They want to survive. But at the same time, I'm thinking that if you take five people and they read this story, you are going to get five different ideas about things.
No, I have to disagree with you there.
You think so?
You're going to get 10.
Ah, okay. All right. Yeah.
Trust me, I can come up with three or four different interpretations right now, you know.
Yeah, I don't think there's any solid answer here. I think it's...
Not in the least.
I think it's a thought game. Let's move on to favorite points of plot. Okay, I made a mistake here.
One last statement on concepts, though.
Okay.
But isn't that what a novel is?
Oh, well, yeah. The best ones are.
So,
The best ones will always make you think.
Yep.
So, anyway, now we'll move forward to favorite points of plot. There was...
Now, before we go on with this, you've got a disagreement, but I think you're misreading what I wrote.
I was just looking at that, and I agree.
Because I said the first book,
right.
There's no central plot in the first book, and I say in the second book, comma, in Olympus Descending, semicolon, I'm not saying Olympus Descending is the second book.
Right.
I'm saying in the second book, in the story Olympus Descending.
Right.
Boom.
And I figured that out. So I'm going to retract my disagreement. So forage ahead.
Okay. In Olympus Descending, there was a plot line about a Vorta named Vanus, who was seizing entire food supplies from one planet to feed another. The implication being that the inhabitants of the productive planet would not survive the coming winter without those supplies. Okay. Why was she doing this? Why is this here? What is the resolution to this line of inquiry? And why did she hate the first planet so much?
Well, this is where I think we're going to see we get the foreshadowing that the Vorta are going to replace the Founders. When the Founders scatter, there's not going to be anybody else to lead yet, but the Vorta will take over. And this Vanus was asserting her authority. She starved out one planet to save another.
And, well, my point was, that didn't make sense. She's starving out the planet that is productive for a planet that isn't.
Yeah. The one thing I will agree with you is it wasn't concluded. But I think we're just establishing the authority of the Vorta with this storyline.
I'm just wondering, though, now, are you talking about Vanus or are you talking about the Vorta named David George?
I mean,
the third.
All the Vorta.
But especially David George the third.
Yeah. Okay. So I think as far as the Ferengi story is concerned, I think it was mostly about the struggle to accept change, especially the amount of change and the rapid change that Rom was introducing to a very, very old society, threw him into a tailspin. And when Leeta was having difficulty with her childbirthing, Rom left a power vacuum that allowed Brunt to make an attempt to take over. So if it hadn't been for Quark and a few others, Quark and Nog and a few others, Brunt would have overthrown and taken over. So
just like he did in every episode of DS9 that he appeared in.
Yeah. Well, he had the power. All right.
See? You can trust Brunt to do this every time. He's trustworthy.
Yeah, he just don't like Quark.
You don't like what he's going to do, but he's trustworthy in doing it.
Yes. So the part of the Dominion story I enjoyed the most was the Jemadar's visit to the planet to free the female founder from the solitary prison. I was really confused if this was even an actual scene in the book or an alternate timeline thing or just an imaginary plan that was going through the mind.
Because the way it was written, it seemed like it was real and he was carrying it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he's talking to Kira, who he just killed. And
yeah, but did he even really kill her?
Maybe. I guess not.
Yeah.
I guess she's okay. I'm okay. I'm fine. Don't worry.
So now we have a few
I'll
themes.
Be all right.
Now we have a few themes to go through. What were
greed.
Your...
Greed.
Yes.
Greed.
Greed, plenty of that.
Greed and the need to change. Greed.
Greed and the need to change. Are they mutually exclusive on Ferenginar?
It depends. I think they really are, because Rom is pushing for a not so greedy society.
Yeah, more benevolent.
Yeah.
But it's...
And then in the Dominion story, it was, why am I here? But that's a question for a lot of stories.
Yeah.
How will my people survive? And the unasked question of, where do my people come from? Where do we find babies? Babies. Yeah. We need babies.
Yeah. It's an interesting story. I just don't get into the metaphysical kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, all right. Closing thoughts.
But you got to remember that the only difference between a metaphysical story and a paraphysical story is where those groups, those function groups, are bonded on the ring structure.
Ah.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a chemistry thing.
Yep. So anyway, I have closing thoughts. You didn't list any, but maybe now you do have them. I enjoyed the Ferengi story more than the Dominion one. Both were well written, but I think the second one was more of a metaphysical, make you think kind of thing. And sometimes I just don't get into the very much. It was kind of unexpected,
especially when a lot of it was about Odo's relationship with Kira, and based on the fact that we don't know if the Jemadar was breaking the founder out of prison or not, did Odo really say these things that he thought he said to Kira or not?
Yeah. Some of that was taken right from the TV show, like that talk they had in Dax's closet. And
well, that talk in Dax's closet went on for a lot longer in this story than it did in the TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, how much of that is Odo thinking he said that and Odo really said that?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. They got together in the end anyway, so.
Yeah. So now we have done exactly what David R. George III did in this book, and we have talked about three different items interchangeably back and forth, so I'm sure everybody is plenty confused by now. So,
and we're not really talking that much about the Vanis part of the Dominion story, so we didn't go in for the fourth. Hey!
Yeah, so for next time, we're going to make it a little simpler on us and on the listeners. We're going to move to the first book in the Worlds of DS9 series, and we're only going to read one of the novellas, and the first one is Cardassia, the Lotus Flower. So that's where we're going next. And if you're looking to communicate with us and tell us that maybe we're just getting old and stuff like that, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us at CAG.org.
And most importantly, most of this material in these two stories are discussable materials. So if you have an idea where the Vorta are going to go to keep power, where the founders are going to go to resolve their heritage, or how Ferengi is going to survive brutal Brunt Rom war, drop us a line wherever you can find a place to drop us a line. But let us know where you dropped us the line, because we're getting old and we don't know all these things that you guys know. And
not only that, now, if you've been listening along the whole time, you have a pretty good idea of what books we have gone through. If you know of anything that is Klingon exclusively, right now we're just kind of pandering to the Xeno Legion, okay? We're going through stories that come from other society. If you know of anything that we missed that's Klingon, please, please let us know, because it is supposed to be the Klingon Book Review Podcast.
Remember, and this is important, only you can make the Klingon Podcast great again.
I don't know. Facepalm moment there. Okay, so if you like what we're doing, go over there to somewhere and tell your friends about it. Give us a 4 or 5 star, 6 star, whatever review. Tell everybody about us and keep on listening. We appreciate you being there. And so, for Bound by Honor, I am Jajim.
And I am Jorn.
And join us next time. Kapla! You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kurg Zantai Loon Keej. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplop!